Okay. So by a show of hands, how many of you, and this is no judgment, feel like you've experienced or witnessed a miracle at some point in your life? A good number of you. Now, sometimes we don't talk about these miracles in our lives very often. So I'd encourage you, I'd love to hear the stories at the picnic if you want to share. Or I would encourage you to tell each other, because sometimes we don't talk enough about how God is at work in our lives and these amazing things that we experience. Those of you who didn't put up their hand, well, I'll ask at the end again and see if we have a different idea of miracle by the end of the sermon. Today's gospel is a familiar story about one of Jesus' miracles, raising Lazarus from the dead. It's been one of my favorite stories since I was a kid. There's so many elements of this story that put the imagination into overdrive. Right? You're like, so, like, what did Lazarus look like? Like, when they pulled off those wrappings, like, what did he look like? What was his life afterwards? Like, what was it like to die again? Like, there's so many questions that just come up. And a lot of them have to do with the very, very rich emotional undercurrents of this story. So, I was going to do something silly. I'll just tell you what I was going to do. The kids, we can actually do it if you want to. But I'm going to go over the story again, and I'm going to pull out the feelings that are in this story. So there's two sisters, Mary and Martha. The brother Lazarus has died, and they feel very, very, very sad. And I was going to ask the kids to show us the saddest possible face you can make. So I'm very good at pulling faces, just have to ask my mom. But, so I'm just going to look out. You don't need to come up. Let's see, whoever wants to make a sad face, make the saddest face you can possibly make. That looks pretty sad. and then we have their good friend Jesus, who they had expected to come and arrive before their brother died. He has not come. That's a good sad face, actually. We're having more out there. And they feel disappointed. They also feel maybe a little bit angry. It doesn't say that they felt angry, but there's certainly this sense of being disappointed. We all know what it feels like to be disappointed. When they arrive, when Jesus does arrive, he asks Mary, yes, Martha, do you believe in me? If you remember from what we did with the children's time, she answered, yes, we do believe. Jesus was sad about Lazarus's death too. And he went with the sisters and the crowd, and he wept and he comforted them. And then eventually he tells them to call Lazarus out of the tomb. So that's the story. When I hear this story, I'm always really, really taken with the moment when Jesus shouts, or when they shout, come out, and Lazarus emerges from the grave. We didn't quite get there in the reading today, but the verse in the gospel passage says, the dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. When I think about Lazarus coming out of that tomb, I think, now that's a real miracle, right? A man's body has been restored to life by Jesus. That is a miracle. And it most definitely is. But since I started working at the National Office in Canadian Ministries a year and a half ago, I've started seeing different dimensions of this story. My tendency, and I think many of our tendencies, is to focus exclusively on this miraculous transformation that happens in Lazarus's life. But as I work more and more with congregations, I've been thinking a lot more about how Mary and Martha are also transformed in this story. We use the story of Lazarus coming back from the dead in our work a lot with congregations. especially those that are dwindling in numbers and struggling to see where God is calling them. Many congregations see their church as living in the shadow of death, whether it is a few months away, a few years away, a few decades away. They're worried that death is coming. When we work with these congregations, they express similar feelings to what Mary and Martha expressed: worry and sadness, disappointment, anger, weariness, doubt. They also ask similar questions. Where is Jesus? If he really loved us, he would be here. We have been faithful followers, so why hasn't Jesus brought us back from the brink? What is interesting about the story of Lazarus' death is that Jesus does not chastise Mary and Martha for their feelings or questions. What he does instead is he weeps with them and he comforts them. He also asks them that important question: do they believe in him? I am the resurrection and life. Those who believe in me will live even though they die, and those who live and believe in me will never die. Do you believe this? And of course, what we heard them say is, yes, we believe. When we read this passage, or maybe I'm just projecting, when I read this passage, I get caught up in the climax of the story, that moment of Lazarus emerging from the grave. And I skim over the many important turning points in the stories when Lazarus' sisters turn to Jesus in the midst of their sadness, anger, doubt, and they affirm that they believe in the new life that Christ offers. I see that oftentimes in my own life and in the life of congregations, like, I want my story to be a Lazarus story, you know? There's things in my life, I mean, even just this week, that are challenging, and I think, why don't I have this? Why do I have broken relationships? Why, you know? And I want it to be that Jesus miraculously enters in one moment I'm dead in this area of my life, and the next moment I'm alive and healed and well. But the truth is that most of us, and many of us, are more like, God is calling us to be like more like Mary and Martha's, who in the midst of anger and fear and doubt have to keep turning, have to turn, have to say, I believe. We haven't seen the miracle, but we believe. Sometimes I fall into the trap, and congregations that I see fall into the trap of trying to resurrect themselves. Like, I'm just going to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and like tomorrow I'm going to start doing this, and then in a month I'm going to be like this, and then and I imagine that I'm going to be somebody completely different, you know? Right now, I look a certain way, but in a year, you know, my life is going to be amazing in these ways, right? And that happens too sometimes in congregations. They latch on to doing something. Right now we're like this, but, you know, in a year our whole church is going to be, this is an extreme example, this hasn't really happened, but in a year our whole church is going to be, we're going to be, say, a food bank, like the whole thing is going to be a food bank, and we're going to be a community hub, and we're going to be, and it's possible, all things are possible with God, but we can't do it alone. So a lot of the transformation that I witness in my job actually happens not through one amazing, miraculous event, but through repeated turning and moving small steps towards where Jesus is calling. I'm going to tell you a couple stories about two. There's two Presbyterian churches I'm going to tell you about. Both of them are also in urban centers. And their transformation has been, it's been about turning to Jesus and taking small steps to connect with their community. So one is Gloucester Presbyterian Church in Ottawa. And Reverend Denise Allen McCartney tells this story all the time. She's holding it in a webinar, so it's public knowledge. But when she arrived for her first day as a minister at her church, she was surprised to see the whole parking lot filled with cars, like the whole parking lot. She was like, great, they're having a party for me. Like, this is a welcome event. And then she got in, and there was only two people there. And so she said, well, what's with all the cars? And they said, oh, the parents from the school across the street use our parking lot for pickup and drop off. And at the first session meeting, she suggested to them that perhaps they should start serving tea, coffee, and cookies to those parents waiting. And one of the elders said, well, what a great idea. We usually try to keep them out. Like, this has been a source of annoyance for us for several years. And this began a shift in the church's thinking. Gradually but steadily, they shifted their focus from inward looking to outward looking. How are we doing? How can we survive was their question before. And their question gradually became, why did God put us here? How can we serve? This is the language that Reverend McCartney uses herself. So they knew that they wanted to bless their neighbors. So they prayed a lot. They did prayer walks. They asked for God's guidance. They went out and started connecting with their neighbors. One thing that they did was that they went and met with all of the people that they perceived as community leaders in their area. So they met with the food bank operators, they met with the neighborhood watch, they met with the city councilors, they met with the area principals. And they had three questions. They asked them, what do you love about your neighborhood? What are your concerns, and what do you hope for? Out of that, small things started to happen. They continued their coffee and tea ministry. They started a Freezy outreach, so they literally sat on their lawns, and when kids were coming home from school, they offered them Freezies. They started to do more with the school, so they invited the principal. They had a God Loves Schools Day. I don't know if that's exactly what it's called, but something like that. And they invited the principals from the area schools to come and speak to their congregation. And now that they're the volunteers who help with the morning drop-off in the morning now, they have been asked to create friendship baskets around family days for the families at that school who don't have enough food. So gradually, they begin to reach out more and more. So Reverend Al McCartney described what God has guided their congregation to do as taking little tiny steps, but doing them consistently, and they added to big changes. 5 years ago, they had 50 people in worship with only a handful of kids. Now they regularly have 130 people with 30 children. So the interesting thing is, this wasn't a Lazarus-like miracle, but more like a Mary and Martha miracle, a gradual resurrection, a turning the hearts towards trusting where Jesus would lead them. Another quick story, La Communauté Chrétienne Soulouée, it's a worshiping community, a new worshiping community in Montreal, and they reach out to newly arrived African immigrants and offer a ministry of accompaniment and presence. So Soulouée is named after the Pool of Siloam. That's the place where Jesus instructed the blind man in John's gospel to wash the mud off his eyes and see again. The name Siloam means sent. As a church community, they really prioritize their calling as the sent people of God. Like Gloucester Church, they don't have some kind of big, overarching plan. It's good to have a plan. I'm not saying it's not. But they did not enter into this as like a strategic planning. They kind of went where God was leading. There were many French-speaking African immigrants arriving into Montreal each day, and they decided they just wanted to be good neighbors. One particularly touching story was when a member of their congregation had a family member pass away, the whole community, so they don't just send the minister and an elder to go visit. They're like, no, we're going to visit, right? Like, we're bringing food, we're going there. And they went to their apartment. And when they were going through the hallways and they arrived at this person's home, the neighbors, one of these people's neighbors, noticed this group kind of going to this neighbor's house. And they had known that their neighbor had had this death. And so this new family of new African immigrants kind of followed the Siloway people into their neighbor's home. And as the community of Siloway prayed and sang and ate with the family, this other neighbor family was deeply, deeply moved. And they said, "Who are you? How can I belong?" And that family then joined Sulaway. And now they also reach out to the newly arrived in Montreal. I find this story very touching because I feel like sometimes we put these ideas of what church growth looks like, we just try to make them so big. And what we see with Sulaway and what we also see with Gloucester was that they were like, sometimes the steps that God is asking us to make are not as grandiose or as big as we think. It means eating with people. It means being present in people's lives. It means being with our neighbors. So there are many other stories I could share about churches reaching out to their neighbors. One of the real joys of my job, I really love my job. This is a whole other story I'll tell you at the picnic, but I came to it in a strange way. I feel like God really called me to this position. And one of the things that I love is being with churches and hearing them say, yes, we believe in Jesus, we believe, and we believe in the new life that he offers. So what I find interesting about the little exchange that Jesus has with Mary about the resurrection, Jesus tells her, your brother will rise to life. And she says, I know, he will rise to life on the last day. But as we know, Jesus does not wait until the last day, the end of time, to resurrect Lazarus. He does it that day. His response to Martha is, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me will live, even though they die. And those who live and believe in me will never die. We too are offered two types of restoration through Christ. Being restored to life after death, and being restored to life, in this life, right at this moment. Mary and Martha don't experience a physical death in the story, but they are restored to new life by turning and saying, even in the midst of their most difficult times, I believe. Our reading from 2 Corinthians today reminds us of the power of the kind of restoration that Mary and Martha experienced, the type of restoration that is happening inside of us day by day as we turn to Jesus. It says, even though on the outside it looks like things are falling apart on us, that's true, sometimes it really feels that way, on the inside, where God is making new life, not a day, hear that, not a day goes by without his unfolding grace. Not a day goes by in our lives in which there's not a miracle happening inside of us that's brought about by God's unfolding grace. These hard times, this is the Message translation, by the way, these hard times are small potatoes. Small potatoes. Sometimes they don't feel like small potatoes, but we are told that they're small potatoes compared to the coming good times, the lavish celebration prepared for it. There's far more here in our world than meets the eye. You, here at Morningside High Park, you are being restored each day. Sometimes it might not feel like you are, but at this very moment, you are experiencing a miracle. God is raising you up and making new life in you. We can shout, we can rejoice in that by shouting that we believe. Thank you and amen.